Some of us have been led to think that faithfulness and being a good Christian simply amounts to avoiding what is immoral or sinful. Following Jesus is not really about any onerous duty we are likely to tell ourselves. Instead, it will give us peace. It will heal and nurture and save and comfort. It will benefit us.
That's the Reverend Dr. Casey Baggett. And today she brings you an inspiring message of faith entitled, Making It Matter. I'm Peter Wallace, and this is Day One.
Welcome to Day One, the weekly program that brings you outstanding preachers from America's historic Protestant churches, sharing insight and inspiration from God's Word for your life. Now to introduce this week's preacher, here's our host, Peter Wallace.
Thanks, Sherry. We're honored to have with us today the Reverend Dr. Casey Baggett, an ordained United Church of Christ minister who serves as executive minister of the Community Church of Vero Beach, Florida. Before coming to Community Church, he served churches in Minneapolis and was also a bioethics and spiritual ministries consultant for a national healthcare firm. Casey received her bachelor's in psychology from the University of Minnesota, a Master of Divinity degree from United Seminary in the Twin Cities, and a Doctor of Ministry degree from the Graduate Theological Foundation in South Bend, Indiana. Casey, welcome to Day One.
Thank you, Peter.
You serve as Executive Minister of Community Church of Vero Beach with your husband, the Reverend Dr. Bob Baggett, who will preach for us on December 3rd, the first Sunday of Advent. You two were last with us in early 2015, so refresh our memory about your church. It's a thriving outpost for the good news on Florida's Treasure Coast.
We have a wonderful, active, busy, committed church of about, 2,000 members, a little more. We have a fair supply of snowbirds in our congregation, being Floridians as we are, and attracting northerners to come to our beautiful location in the winter. But whether we have our members as full-time residents in Vero Beach or seasonal residents, they've bonded in an incredible way and share a ministry together that's been a pleasure to help facilitate.
Mm-hmm. The church is very active in helping people in the community, partnering with a number of services and outreaches and serving those in need. Share some of those ministries with us.
Well, we have quite a number of philanthropic organizations and opportunities on the Treasure Coast where our church is located. And we feel really privileged to be able to be a part of that. There is a small community near us that has a fairly significant number of underprivileged children, and we work intensively with that particular community and have recently been involved in starting a ministry called Crossover there with some very enterprising folk, some who live in the community and some who are members of our own church. Mm-hmm. It's a tutoring opportunity that our members engage in, and when the kids maintain a grade point average at a certain level, the reward to them is basketball playing, and we help secure time on basketball courts for them and see that they are able to even attend professional basketball games occasionally as a reward. And it's been a tremendous impact in those kids' lives that we're proud to have been a part of. So that's just one little snippet of what we've done.
It's not too common that married spouses serve the same church. I imagine that brings a lot of joy, but perhaps some challenges as well. How does that work for you and Bob?
You know, we've said jokingly that although we've been married almost 15 years, we've really been married three times that long. Because most married couples have the opportunity to spend maybe 8 hours a day. We spend 24 hours a day together. We work together. We play together. We are together continually. And I think that has a real benefit in many ways for our ministries. There's never an occasion where one will question the other's commitment or need to engage in church activity because we get it. You know, we're both there quite a lot of the time. And we can also help each other see when enough is enough. And that's helpful too. There's a deep understanding that we share about the mission we share.
What would you say are your particular emphases in ministry at Community Church?
I would say that for the last number of years, I've had more and more opportunity to focus on spiritual development mm-hmm. in the congregation. And I enjoy that a great deal. So teaching opportunities are something that I long for, I look for, as well as groups of sharing and interpersonal exchange. So I look for those opportunities. I also have the chance most Sundays to be the primary crafter of the worship itself. Mm-hmm. So the writing of the litanies and the liturgies that we share and the prayers that are spoken. So that's a big portion of my time as well.
Well, your sermon today is based on the parable Jesus tells in the gospel lesson for this Sunday from Matthew chapter 25. Would you read the passage for us?
I'd be glad to. Matthew 25, verses 14 to 30. For it is as if a man going on a journey summoned his slaves and entrusted his property to them. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, to another 1, to each according to his ability. Then he went away. The one who had received the 5 talents went off at once and traded with them and made 5 more talents. In the same way, the one who had the 2 talents made 2 more talents. But the one who had received the 1 talent went off and dug a hole in the ground and hid his master's money. After a long time, the master of those slaves came and settled accounts with them. Then the one who had received the 5 talents came forward, bringing 5 more talents, saying, "Master, you handed over to me 5 talents. See, I have made 5 more talents. His master said to him, "Well done, good and trustworthy slave. You have been trustworthy in a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master." And the one with the 2 talents also came forward, saying, "Master, you handed over to me 2 talents. See, I have made 2 more talents. His master said to him, "Well done, good and trustworthy slave. You have been trustworthy in a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master." Then the one who had received the 1 talent also came forward, saying, "Master, I knew that you were a harsh man, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you did not scatter seed. So I was afraid, and I went and hid your talent in the ground. Here, you have what is yours." But his master replied, "You wicked and lazy slave, you knew, did you, that I reap where I did not sow and gather where I did not scatter? Then you ought to have invested my money with the bankers, and on my return I would have received what was my own with interest. So take the talent from him and give it to the one with the 10 talents. For to all those who have, more will be given, and they will have an abundance. But from those who have nothing, even what they have will be taken away. As for this worthless slave, throw him into the outer darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth."
Very interesting. Casey, your sermon is entitled "Making It Matter." Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Peter. According to one online dictionary, responsibility is defined as a duty or obligation to satisfactorily perform or complete a task assigned by someone or created by one's own promise or circumstances that one must fulfill and which has a consequent penalty for failure. Responsibility. I don't know about you, but growing up, I had some fairly unpleasant associations with that word. I was responsible for taking the garbage out. I was responsible for walking the dog and cleaning up after him. I was responsible for weeding the flower beds and completing all homework assignments in a timely manner. None of these duties exactly inspired joy or enthusiasm in me. Responsibility became, I suppose, something I would rather not have had. Maybe I'm not alone. Maybe that's why we modern church folk don't stress responsibility much. We tend to emphasize other reasons for pursuing a life of faith. Following Jesus is not really about any onerous duty we are likely to tell ourselves. Instead, it will give us peace. It will instill a lasting hope in us. It will heal and nurture and save and comfort. It will benefit us. But then we come to the lectionary text assigned for us today from Matthew's Gospel, and we run smack into my old nemesis, responsibility. At least I can't read the parable of the talents without recognizing that taking responsibility is a big component of what Jesus is trying to teach us. This parable is told as part of a long teaching sequence reportedly occurring near the end of Jesus' life. A plot to silence him is already underway. The intensity and urgency of his teaching now seems to increase. It's almost as if Jesus is summing up. He alludes to his impending departure from this world, and he cautions readiness in his followers. He advocates alertness and engagement in seeing that his work is carried out in his absence. He tells this parable. Jesus describes a master who, as he is about to go away on a journey, summons his three servants, entrusting each with a portion of his assets. To one servant, the master gives 5 talents. To another, he gives 2 talents. And to the third servant, he gives just 1 talent. Talents were considerable sums of money. A talent was equivalent to around 15 years' worth of wages. I like to envision the first crowds gathered to hear Jesus teach, perhaps simple fishermen, herders, peasants, listening to this parable and imagining themselves taking responsibility for such vast sums. As Jesus tells the parable, the servant given 5 talents invests and doubles his assets, as does the servant who receives 2. Both took significant risks, both were aggressive. When the master returned, both were praised, given even more responsibility, promoted, and invited to share the joy of the master. But the third servant has a different story to tell. You see, he was a cautious, prudent fellow. He has observed that the master is a tough businessman and will not be pleased if the principal is lost. So the third servant digs a hole and buries the money in the ground, which was, in fact, a perfectly reasonable thing to do if he did not wish to be liable for any loss. When the master returns and this servant is called upon to give an account of himself, he says smugly that he is able to return to the master exactly what was entrusted to him. He can account for it down to the last penny. Now maybe he's expecting that the master will be pleased that he neither squandered nor risked the master's principal. True, no great gain was achieved, but no harm was done, right? The cautious servant must be assuming that the master will invite him to join his fellow servants in entering into the joy of the master. But here comes the twist in the story that must have stunned Jesus' listeners. Jesus tells them that this prudent, judicious, sensible, practical, careful, cautious man was treated very harshly by the master. Not only was his single talent taken from him and given to the other successful investors, but on top of that, instead of getting his invitation to the big party, he is unceremoniously thrown into outer darkness where there is weeping and gnashing of teeth. Now, there's a twist you wouldn't have expected, would you? Just because he was practical and sensible, he's tossed into darkness? Just because he was cautious and careful, he's thrown out to weep? Just because he was fearful of failure, he's consigned to the corner reserved for teeth gnashers? Who saw that coming? What's Jesus trying to say? Could it be Jesus' way of saying to his disciples, as he anticipates the clash with authorities that will lead to his death, that he plans to go, having trusted them with his treasure? Could it be his way of telling them that if they bury his message of God's loving kingdom, that he'll be very disappointed in them? Could he be declaring that if they have the confidence, the courage, the trust in themselves that he has in them, then they'll take the wealth of his love, his compassion, his goodness, his righteousness, and they'll take that wealth into the world to let it multiply? This isn't primarily a parable of financial acumen, after all. It's a parable of faith acumen. Have we been given the treasure of faith? If we have it, we will invest it. Not hiding the best of what we have, not being prudent or cautious, not seeking our safety and security above all else. We will demonstrate proper management of the treasure of our faith by taking risks for the sake of spreading and multiplying the good news of God's love. Philip Halley was a professor, philosopher, author, and a sincere student of good and evil. Having studied the worst of Nazi cruelty in all its twisted and horrific dimensions, he turned his attention to radical good. While granting that there is, among many of us, indifference to the hardship and the pain of others, there is also, as Halley recorded in his book Tales of Good and Evil, the capacity for astonishing self-giving, risk-taking, and rescue-making by some. What makes them capable of this? Why do some step forward to engage danger on behalf of others, even at enormous personal risk? What fuels the courageous moral passion of these world changers? Consider Reverend André Trocmé and his wife Magda, French Protestants who lived in a tiny mountain village called Le Chambon during World War II. Along with their fellow townsfolk, they provided refuge and, when possible, escape from the Nazis for Jews and others fleeing Nazi persecution. Although the Trocmés and other villagers who shared in their rescue operation were under surveillance, they quietly continued their efforts throughout the war. Ultimately, their investment of personal risk and gospel love yielded an enormous reward. Between 1940 and 1944, the villagers of Le Chambon saved the lives of more than 3,500 Jews, most of whom were children, as well as 1,500 others fleeing persecution. Years later, Magda Trocmé was interviewed by those who found it hard to fathom such courage, such risk. She said this about her choices. "Remember that in your life there will be lots of circumstances where you will need a kind of courage, a kind of decision on your own, not about other people, but about yourself. I would not say more." What a fascinating review of a life-changing, life-saving undertaking. Magda Trocmé insists the rescue operation in Le Chambon was not about the people they were trying to save only. It was also about the rescuers themselves. They each had a decision to make. Who would they be? Would they be passive, cautious, self-protective, fearful? Or would they be enactors of Christ's message of compassion and love, no matter the risk? The villagers of Le Chambon chose the risk. As Christ's people, that was their responsibility. As Magda Trocmé concludes, what more is there to say? Still, it has to make you wonder, must such risky responsibility-taking be a component of faithful living? I suppose we are not all taught to believe that. Some of us have been led to think that faithfulness and being a good Christian simply amounts to avoiding what is immoral or sinful, heeding all the prohibitions and negative rules like don't do this, don't do that. But when you think a bit about how Jesus teaches those who will take up his cross and follow his path, there isn't so very much said about what not to do. Instead, Jesus has a great deal to say about what must be done in his name. "Take my yoke," he says, "follow me. Ask, seek, knock, feed my sheep, watch and pray. Let your light shine. Love one another." When you think of the lives that have mattered by making a difference for you or for others, aren't they lives that have risked taking these instructions of Jesus seriously? Perhaps at some cost to themselves? Aren't they people who have responsibly worked to fulfill the most significant and meaningful tasks they could? I remember a line I once read from Giancarlo Menotti that said, "Hell begins on the day when God grants us a clear vision of all that we might have achieved, of all the gifts which we have wasted, of all that we might have done which we did not do." There can be a hellishness to regret, akin to darkness and teeth gnashing. Maybe you've experienced the harsh regret of lost opportunity, of wasted gifts. Avoiding that regret ought to have us asking ourselves again and again, do I love deeply enough, care passionately enough, give generously enough, risk greatly enough? Yet sometimes I look around at our deeply troubled world, our divisions and our distrust and our discouragement, And I'm inclined to think my feeble efforts at resolving things aren't going to matter much in the whole scheme of things. Even if I had the parable's equivalent of 5 talents full of faithfulness, who am I to suppose my investment of them in the world around me will change anything? Ever find yourself thinking that? Ever think that you'd like some guarantees before you took the risk to care or spent the effort to make a difference? When we entertain that kind of pessimism, it helps to remember that the message of Jesus and his love, his compassion, his trust in God's dawning realm isn't something that actually belongs to us. Like the servants in the parable, we've not been entrusted with the gospel as if it is a personal treasure we can hoard. It's only given to us that we might take the responsibility to invest it. Back in 1876, Johanna, a little girl of 10, was placed in an almshouse in Tewksbury, Massachusetts. Johanna's mother had died, and not long afterward, her abusive father deserted the family. Johanna was wild and ungovernable, and she was nearly blind from a childhood eye infection. Her poor vision made reading impossible, limiting her formal education. In the almshouse, she learned lessons in self-sufficiency, but little else. There would appear to have been little hope for this girl. However, after a few years, a young woman named Maggie came to the almshouse. Maggie took an interest in Johanna and took her under her wing. Maggie moved in the blackness of the almshouse like sunlight. Maggie grew flowers in her room. Maggie protected Johanna and the other vulnerable little girls. Maggie taught Johanna that while she was not responsible for having been left in the almshouse, she was responsible for the state of her spirit, wherever she was. Maggie was a young woman of devoted faith. Eventually, Johanna learned about the Perkins School for the Blind in Boston and convinced the almshouse overseers to send her there. She enrolled in 1880, and though her rough manners made the going tough at first, she persevered and graduated in 1886 as valedictorian of her class. After graduation, the director of Perkins School recommended Johanna, who was usually known by her nickname Anne, for her first job. It would be quite a challenge. She was sent to Tuscumbia, Alabama, to be teacher and governess to a 7-year-old blind and deaf girl named Helen Keller. This newly certified teacher, Anne Sullivan, knew about blindness, anger, and fear through the hardships of her life. But she also knew about grace and redemption and the responsibility to live faithfully because of the love of Maggie Hogan, who made the grim reality of an almshouse life bearable and even hopeful for children. And so Anne Sullivan began opening a new world to Helen Keller, who eventually authored 12 books, was a leader in the women's suffrage movement, and was one of the first advocates for the Americans with Disabilities Act. Now, most of us know something about the remarkable achievements of Helen Keller. And most of us know the story of her lifelong devoted friend and teacher, Anne Sullivan. But how many of us knew about Maggie Hogan? Yet it is almost certainly true that without the simple, faithful devotion of Maggie Hogan, invested with patience and trust in almshouse orphans, neither Anne Sullivan nor Helen Keller could have known the lives they did and achieved the remarkable things they did. It might not have appeared that Maggie had been given much to invest. But that's hard to judge, isn't it? What have you got to invest in God's world and among God's precious people? If you have a secret stash of talents buried in your backyard today, dig them up, spread them around, try investing them wherever you spot an opportunity. Use every ounce of what God has invested in you and make it matter. And what will be the outcome when we take on such investment opportunities? We never know. Others' lives may be impacted in ways we never foresaw or could have predicted. But there is, according to this parable, a reliable result for us as investors. The outcome for us is joy, an invitation to know the extraordinary divine joy of our Master. Investing for God's sake in God's people. Isn't that one responsibility we can be honored to take on and enthusiastic to undertake. What more is there to say? Amen.
You've been listening to the Reverend Dr. Casey Baggett, Executive Minister of the Community Church of Vero Beach, Florida, a United Church of Christ congregation. For a free transcript of her message, Making It Matter, call us toll-free at 1-888-411-DAY1. That's 888-411-3291. Or write to us at Day 1, 2715 Peachtree Road, Atlanta, Georgia 30305. Remember, Day 1 depends on the financial gifts of faithful listeners like you. Please consider supporting our ministry with a generous donation. We appreciate it. I'm Sherry Miller. In 2 weeks, you can hear Casey Baggett's spouse, the Reverend Dr. Bob Baggett. Next week, we're honored to have with us the Reverend Shane Page, Senior Pastor of Harrison United Methodist Church in Pineville, North Carolina. His message for Reign of Christ Sunday is entitled The Final Exam. Don't miss this powerful sermon. Casey Baggett offers some final reflections on today's sermon with our host, Peter Wallace.
Casey, you expressed a long-standing frustration with responsibility, but you suspect you're not alone, which may be why we modern church folk don't stress responsibility in our faith much. We tend to emphasize other reasons for living a life of faith, like experiencing peace or lasting hope or healing or comfort, all the personal benefits you said. But Jesus' teaching, particularly this parable of the talents, doesn't sound very much like that. How can we overcome this tendency of avoiding taking responsibility in our faith?
Well, I want to say that I don't think there's anything wrong with finding peace and hope and
right.
personal benefit, personal hope, and so on from being a faithful person. I don't want to say that, but I do want to say that I think in this age when we find the life of faith, a life of committed church membership, less and less appealing to people, we maybe are stressing the personal gain we think people look for, when in fact we miss some of what has traditionally been a call to people of faith to take on the responsibility as a joyful burden, a glad gift, and invest their faith, invest their hope in the world around them, and to see things change on God's behalf.
You said this isn't a parable of financial acumen, it's a parable of faith acumen. If we've been given the treasure of faith, we will invest it, not hiding the best of what we have, not being prudent or cautious, not seeking our safety and security above all else. Instead, you told us we will take risks for the sake of spreading and multiplying the good news of God's love. So Christianity is not for the faint of heart, is it?
No, it isn't. And, you know, I think in an era when we no longer simply equate Christianity with our culture, maybe it's going to become a little more apparent to us that we need to act in a way that's consistent with our Christian faith, even if that's different or more challenging than what the culture asks of us.
You gave us several examples of people who accepted Jesus' call, who took enormous personal risk and exemplified courageous moral passion, simple, everyday people just like us. And in light of their examples, you said we should ask ourselves again and again, do I love deeply enough, care passionately enough, give generously enough, risk greatly enough? And those are important questions. How can we best work through those?
You know, I find myself, let me just offer a personal example. I find myself asking that almost daily. It's easy to let myself off the hook and say, well, I have, as a matter of fact, done X, Y, and Z last week. Maybe I can rest this week, or I don't have to try that hard. And I think compassion fatigue is something we talk about in the culture. I think that can happen for all of us as Christian people. But that's really not what this parable is allowing. Mm. This parable is saying, do something with what I give you. Mm. And I don't think it has to be frightening. I don't think it has to be so difficult and demanding that life becomes harsh for us. But I do think there is that reward of the joy of the master that you somehow share when you take the risk of trying to do something with your faith life that's meaningful.
Casey, what's one thing from your sermon that you hope stays with our listeners in the days ahead?
I love my congregation, and I see the way in which so many of them invest of themselves, and I'm honored and awed by that. I learn from them all the time. I do sometimes see, though, and this sometimes happens, I find, in some of our older congregation members, a tendency to think that maybe their time has passed and they no longer really have the means or are capable to give to others in ways that are life-changing for them or life-enhancing. And I would like them to know it's not done. So long as we breathe a breath of God's Spirit in our lives, we have the chance to make a difference. They can pray. They can hold a hand. They can offer a smile. They are still sharing the phenomenal love of God and Christ's Spirit everywhere they go and have that opportunity. And who knows what difference that will make.
Casey Baggett, thank you for being with us.
Thank you. It was my privilege.
Day One is the voice of America's mainline Protestant churches. Visit us online at dayone.org. Our program is recorded and edited by Donald Jones and produced by Peter Wallace. Thank you for joining us. I'm Sherry Miller wishing you all God's blessings on Day One and forever.